From our studio in Houston, Texas,
it's time for the Angry Admins Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Angry Admins Podcast. It is May 20th, 2008, and this is episode number 71. I am one of your hosts, Joe Bibby.
And I'm the other guy, Ryan Necessary.
And we are back again. We have fought off the electronic killing ants.
Yes, we will talk about that soon.
Yes. So in case you were wondering, since last week's episode took all week to put up, it was not because we were being surrounded by ants. It was because I am lazy.
Well, it's good to know that it's not just the weeks when I edit that it takes forever.
Yes, that's right. So if you're wondering what we're talking about with the ants, apparently Houston is being overrun along with a few other cities, but Houston is obviously near and dear to us since we are in it. And they've been actually spotted near Johnson Space Center. Some ants. They're called Crazy Raspberry Ants. Named after their discoverer, Tom Raspberry, not for the tasty fruit.
You can't make this stuff up, folks. You just can't.
I mean, it sounds like something out of a bad B-movie, you know? Oh. But like some quotes from the story, apparently they reproduce quickly and like, let's see, they've actually, you open up a case and they'll like be all dead inside the case of a computer and they'll just like pour out like freaking mulch or something nasty. That's what came to mind because I just mulched. I don't know why.
So these ants are obviously drawn to electrical.
Yeah, they're drawn to electrical equipment. And not just electrical. And apparently they do bite also, but not with stingers like fire ants. So their bite is pointless, yet they still do it.
Mm. Much like everyone else who's involved in electronics.
Yes, correct. Much like anything else that has its name starting with Crazy Raspberry.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what. I don't know.
So there's always been this thing in Texas. We have fire ants in a severe way.
Right.
Like if you lay down on the ground, in 24 hours you will be a skeleton because that is how bad fire ants are here. Food. If you have like small children, they'll get bitten. Kittens. In a box on the ground will be turned into tiny cat skeletons. I mean, they're like little insect piranha. And a lot of times in Houston, they blame the traffic light outages on fire ants because they'll get up in the traffic signal boxes and build a nest. And then it's mud and it's wet and it shorts out the electronics.
Awesome.
So they actually, via shorting out stoplight boxes, actually are perpetrating a war against the human race. Through traffic accidents, which is why we should kill all fire ants.
Well, if we could get them to target the red light cameras.
Yes, that would be awesome. We'll
train them like dolphins.
Right, to wage war. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they even have multiple queens in their colonies. So, like, you can't just kill the queen and be done.
I think we've got to nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
I think so. It's just too late. Yeah.
Yeah. Only in Texas. Crazy raspberry electronic ants. Oh, man. This is a dream. It just has to be.
It is. I think so.
Oh, so, moving on. We can't really follow that. I mean, that's
all just, right, podcast over. Thanks for coming.
That's just it.
Stay angry. Oh, sorry.
So there's some Wall Street Journal had a little blurb. Hewlett Packard, their sales overall are up 11% this quarter, and it's not because of printing. It says that it's their PC sales that are actually doing well. So I guess they're doing, and we talked about this about 6 to 9 months ago, that HP business computers and some home computers were doing pretty well versus Dell and some of the other guys. So HP continues to be relevant in PC sales.
Yeah. But apparently Mac is even more relevant.
Mm.
Did you see some of these figures about Mac market share this week? Apparently quarter one 2008 market share of desktops and notebooks in $1,000 plus PCs.
Mm-hmm.
So this includes all PCs, including Macs.
Okay.
Apple has a 66% market share.
Hmm.
So that means any computer purchased in a retail store over $1,000, most of those are Macs. Which is pretty much every Mac you buy is over $1,000. So it's like, that's pretty crazy.
So what other PC is available on a store shelf besides Macs?
Dell is in stores, HP.
Oh.
Because
I think if it's just like e-machines or budget PCs, probably none of them are
Dell is now in at Best Buy. Mm. You've got Gateway still trying to make a comeback. And a lot of theirs are becoming premium. You got their new all-in-one that's supposed to be pretty sweet from Gateway. And,
yeah, I'm out of the loop on that.
Yeah, and Apple is in all PCs is solid at a 14% market share. So not just 1,000 plus, but everything, 14%.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's one of those things where, why buy a machine that can do one thing when you could buy a machine that can do all of it?
Right.
So
and look good.
And look good. And you can be cool.
And you won't have to sing the Vista Blues.
Yeah.
I hate that commercial. Have you seen that?
No. I have seen the new commercial with the cheerleaders.
Yeah, that one's pretty lame too.
Yeah.
I'm actually pretty tired of those commercials. They were funny at first.
Well, they need a new gig.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's funny and yeah, everybody loves the PC guy but it's time to move on, please.
Well, Apple, you know, they're just not that creative.
That's right.
Oh, wait, no, wait. Maybe they are. I don't know.
That's funny.
So what was this, speaking of creative stuff, what was the Netflix thing?
So, yeah. You know how you've been talking about how you wanted, like, streaming movies in a little box on demand?
How I was talking about how I don't like Comcast and how video on demand mostly is a failure,
yes.
Whether it's from Microsoft or Comcast Cable or the internet.
So how would you like on-demand movies and TV shows for $9 a month? No.
You got to keep talking.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
So Netflix announced today, actually, at 3 p.m., 3:42 Eastern Time, that they are selling a Roku-designed $100 set-top box that delivers streaming movies to your television. So this is basically finally leveraging their online streaming service to a set-top box, which everybody knew was coming but didn't know, you know, what it was going to cost, what it's going to do. And this is included in... So if you pay minimum $9 a month for the one-at-a-time Netflix, which includes the unlimited streaming on the web, this is now part of that unlimited streaming. So for $100, you get all 10,000 plus titles that they have for streaming, and those are going to be added as time goes on.
Hmm.
Now, apparently there's some downfalls, you know, of course. It does start instantaneously if you have a high enough speed connection. They recommend at least 1.5 megabit, which isn't much, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But the faster your connection is, the better it's going to look. But apparently even at like a 20 megabit connection, it doesn't look that great yet because none of it's high def.
Yeah.
So if you're on a high def TV, it's not going to look very good. But they are planning to move to high def, and the box is upgradable to high def. So it already has the connections. It actually has HDMI and component video out. And apparently in the future, it's even going to accept non-Netflix content.
That's pretty cool.
So pretty cool. Nice
and cheap. Seems like this is sort of the way they're going
right.
With all these companies realize that they're going to have to do both. They're going to have a service and hardware to really make this happen. Because you can't count on consumers to put the thing together on their own or to buy the right thing because it's got to be seamless. It's got to be easy.
Yeah.
The
other big downfall is that you cannot choose videos on the device. So you set up your Netflix queue on the website. And then that's what it pulls from. So this is kind of like what people complained about with the Apple TV when it first came out. You couldn't buy or rent on it.
You still got to go into the other room and get on the Mac.
But, you know, I'm sure that they'll be rolling out firmware updates for this. And this is such a low price point that it's pretty impressive. Apparently there's no hard drive. It's totally fanless because all it basically is a streaming device.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is, to me, showing how, you know, I really think in less than 2 years' time, TV as we know it is going to be irrelevant. And that's why I think Blu-ray is just kind of a non-issue for me because I'm just going to skip past it. I don't need physical media anymore.
We need to put together a team of venture capitalists to invest in TiVo and bring TiVo into the streaming service space,
mm-hmm.
and let them have not only their hardware, but the web backend to support it.
Right.
With standard def, high def.
Well, I think they're trying to do that with the Amazon Unbox service.
Yeah.
But it's not streaming. I mean, it's streaming sort of. It's play as you download, which is like what Apple TV does, where it's downloading it in the background, whereas versus this device, which is actually just live streaming.
Yeah. I only know one person that uses Amazon Unbox, and he has a lot of problems with it.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm going to base all of my opinions on that one anecdotal evidence.
Well, when I had TiVo, and this is when we first started the podcast, I tried it, and it worked, but it took forever to download. Like, longer. You know, I think the Xbox 360 downloads take forever. Man, Amazon Unbox was like, it took forever. I mean, it's all
day. It's
faster
to order the movie on Amazon.
I had to order it, like, in the morning to have it be ready to watch that night.
That's bad. That's very bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no good. I'm sure it's improved, but improving on Suckitude is.
Well, they're encouraging you just to buy the DVD.
Yeah,
see, and get it next day air.
I don't want that.
Because it's faster than streaming it. Sad.
It's very sad. Very, very sad.
Oh, man. Let's see. What else is out here?
So, speaking of streaming and wireless and that kind of thing, we've mentioned this kind of a product before, but apparently now it's official. And I don't know if this is the same company we talked about before, but this company, I guess it's ACOCS and Fujitsu, have announced what they're calling the world's first wireless multicom processor.
Mm.
So I think what we talked about before was just a single software radio type chip.
Right.
And this is a system on a chip that can run up to 3 wireless air interfaces.
Hmm.
So imagine one chip that can do GPS, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, ultra wideband, CDMA, Edge, GPRS, digital video broadcast, high def, regular TV, all of those things, all controlled via software, and up to 3 at once. So that basically your radio chip will never be out of date.
Right. So basically all the modulation of the radio thing is being controlled by software on the fly to tell it, I need you to handle this type of signal right now.
Right. So like if we had an iPhone with this in it, we would never talk about 3G iPhone because it would already be that. And it's just, dang, when is Apple going to finally release the firmware update to give me 3G?
Mm, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, really, I don't think I really grasped how revolutionary this is. I really think this is going to be a game changer if the price is right.
Mm-hmm.
And if it really is future-proofed like it seems. The only thing that may limit this is if something comes out that's like so intensive that the chip just can't calculate it fast enough, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd be curious if the bandwidth is the same with this.
This means that, laptop makers, cell phone makers, now they don't have to make decisions.
Right.
I mean, they just put this in their hardware and they can go anywhere in the world and not have to worry about what kind of cell service it is because it's just going to work.
Right. And they can just focus on design.
That's pretty sweet.
And usability for once.
Yeah. I think that's pretty sweet. So to go back and revisit our story from last week and the week before and the week before that, talking about the now failed Microsoft Yahoo buyout merger thing. Apparently, Carl Icahn, who's a big financier, he's kind of putting together a collective of Yahoo shareholders who want the deal to happen. That actually want Microsoft to come in and buy Yahoo.
Mm-hmm.
So he's gathering up kind of an army of Yahoo stockholders, and he himself bought a whole ton of Yahoo shares after the price tanked, after Microsoft walked away.
Okay.
So now he and his cronies now control a little over 30% of all of the Yahoo shares. So it looks like every week, this thing is like gaining steam.
Nice.
And pretty soon they're going to have enough power to pretty much pull Yahoo in whatever direction they want.
Hmm.
So that's it's looking kind of interesting over there. We'll see what happens.
So the hippies are going to lose?
I guess so. Yeah,
Jerry. They always do.
Yeah, Jerry Yang.
Because they're just too passive.
You're out. Clean out your desk, man. Because these people are kind of gunning for you.
That's funny.
So what was the thing we needed to rescind from last week?
Apparently the XPS story that the Wall Street Journal put out is false.
Right. So I guess it was last week.
This was last week, yeah.
So we talked about, XPS is going away. Or maybe it was the week before. The Dell XPS line was going to be going away or greatly diminished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that Dell was going to just keep their Alienware PCs as the main gaming thing. But now it seems like that was incorrect.
Right,
and
yeah.
XPS is here to stay.
And, yeah. And not just as like a brand, but as a gaming system. So yeah. Apparently the Wall Street Journal got it wrong.
Wow, way to fail.
And since, you know, we don't ever have any original thought, we got it wrong.
Right. Yeah, we're just passing along the incorrect info.
We're just riding on the fail boat and we can't help it if it's going under.
No, can't.
We're not the captain of the fail boat.
Yeah, from now on I'm just going to doubt everything I read.
Yeah. We'll just end every story with, unless
maybe
they're lying.
Dum, dum, dum.
So, AT&T, right? They have 3G, I think, is what I've heard.
Mm.
And apparently, even though everybody hates their edge service, their 3G service is like the best in the business.
Mm.
And it's the fastest 3G. And by 2009, 20 megabit 3G.
Wow. Maybe that's why their edge sucks so bad, is because they want you to upgrade to the
could be
to the 3G phones.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, that's pretty crazy. 20 megabit wherever I am.
I love it.
Then I can get rid of every Comcast service. That is glorious.
Yeah.
I can trade one horrible monopoly for another.
Yeah, the Death Star.
Yay.
Yeah, but you got to love AT&T because them and Mac, they're just like buddies.
Them and the government, too. I like it because they let them tap my phone and my internet and filters. And they're just so great. They have me as their second place person.
We'll see how fast their 3G is after their crazy Raspberry Ants attack.
That's good. That's good.
I don't know.
So did you see the stuff about SSH?
Yeah, I did actually see this. This is the thing where, you know, SSH, it's been around for quite a few years now. And originally, it was a lot better versus the current alternatives, which were like RLog and Telnet and that sort of thing. And the encryption for SSH at the time was good. And, you got to have a lot of computers to crack it, and it takes a long, long time. Well, guess what? If you got like a 20,000 host botnet, yeah, they'll crack it.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, you know, I never really thought about that until I saw the story. You mentioned it to me, and I'm surprised it's taken this long for them to use a botnet for this. I guess everything else they're making money off of, so why bother using it to hack into stuff? But yeah, if you have 20,000 bots, brute force doesn't take quite as long as it used to.
Right.
Maybe that's why the military's looking into it.
Yeah, because they're afraid. Because, you know, all those overseas processors, they all got back doors in them.
That's right.
we can't trust it. But, so that's crazy. I mean, if you control a botnet, I mean, you own email. You own denial of service. You own password cracking. I mean, you could do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why all you people out there who don't patch your Windows systems or have unauthorized, non-genuine advantage stuff that can't get patches... you're just hurting the tubes, man.
I wish there was a way I could like hack the Gibson.
and then what would you do?
And then I would release the DaVinci virus,
mm.
which targets all of those botnets and then erases their hard drives.
Yeah.
Can we do that? Let's work on that.
We could, or we could just rig them up so that they download like Linux.
And installs Linux.
Installs Linux over the hard drive.
That'd be sweet.
So the other thing I was going to throw out, and I have no references or other information.
Well, that's the best kind of thing to throw out.
Right.
Because then you can deny it later with no problems.
I was like, this is what I heard. See, this is the air quotes right here.
Well, and besides, when we quote real things, it's lies anyway.
So. Right, right. Pretty much everything I say, just ignore it. So the other thing I heard is that the new trend in... I guess, virus and hacker paranoia is that the machines are being used to spawn VM, like entire VM hosts that, you know, VirusScan isn't looking at it because it's like a whole other virtual machine on your box.
It essentially is, they're using it to create a whole new computer.
It's like a ghost within the machine.
Wow.
It's pretty sweet, right?
That's, if it's not happening, it should be, because that's just too sweet to not do. It's
pretty cool, right? I need to go check my Vista box. I'll be right back.
Look for the...
It's like, Joe, I really need to like try out some VM stuff at home. Dude, you already got some VM stuff. You just don't know it.
So Google, once again, giving back to the people,
mm-hmm.
trying to keep everyone from realizing that they're evil.
Mm-hmm.
This past week, they released a service called Google Doctype. So essentially what, and this is what they call it, is an encyclopedia for web developers. It's like a Wikipedia thing, type thing, but it's all focused on web. If you have questions about CSS, HTML, dynamic stuff, best practices, that kind of thing, you're pretty much almost guaranteed to find it in this little centralized thing. It's pretty crazy, and it's, you know, it's cross-browser stuff. You know, it's not just focused on Google stuff, but it's, they're really, Google's really good about taking information and creating a community around it, and this is one more thing where they're really just giving back all of this information in a nice organized way.
Hmm.
So if you're a web developer or just fiddling, you know, this is a good place if you are having trouble with something or want to know how to do a certain thing, you know, do a search on this and you'll probably find the answer.
That's cool. But you know, Google, they're not all good.
I know.
Because in India, they gave up the IP address of a guy who made an ugly blog post about a government official.
Really?
Yeah. So that's bad.
Evil Google. But they're supporting IPv6. You can now get to Google.com with IPv6 computers.
You know what else is supporting IPv6?
What?
China.
Really?
Yeah, like most of China is IPv6 already. I mean, they're ready to go. You know what I mean? Like, they don't mess around.
Hmm. So.
Now, maybe they can't browse anything because of the Great Firewall of China.
Right.
But all the sites that you can't look at, they're being blocked with the speed and the reliability of IPv6.
Hmm. Nice. Nice.
So they're forward thinking.
So maybe I should just move to IPv6 now. And then, like, if you're not, if you're IPv4, then you're just not relevant anymore.
Yeah, don't listen to our podcast.
Yeah. I don't think you can get to our podcast with IPv6.
We're yet. IPv1.
Yeah. Because we don't like change. We're admins. Well, that's going to wrap up another finely blended edition of Angry Admins. If you are interested in the stories we talked about here and want to read more about those, go to our website, angryadmins.com, and look at the show notes. We'll have links to all the stories we talked about today. If you have ideas, questions, comments, or just know that we're lonely, send us an email at feedback@angryadmins.com. And if you want to follow me during the week, I am always on twitter.com/BIBZ. You can check me out there. Follow me if you're not on Twitter. You're like 10 years behind the time. So until next time, I am Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.